From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From bookstores to e-readers, it's been quite a year in the world of publishing. From memoirs to graphic novels to sharp nonfiction, there were stories of war, adventure, and discovery, and one or two guilty pleasures. We have three big readers here to review and reflect on a year of stories. This hour on Point, the best books of 2014. You can join us on air or online. What are your top books this year? What kept you up late at night turning the pages? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Chicago is Janet Potter. She writes for The Millions, an online magazine covering books and culture. Janet, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Great to have you. And with us from Washington, Mark LaFramboise. He's a book buyer at Politics and Prose Bookstore. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jane.
Listeners, we've got all a list of our guests' favorite books, as well as the On Point staff picks at our website, onpointradio.org. So, Janet, start us off here. Tell us about your top pick.
My favorite book this year was called Another Great Day at Sea by Jeff Dyer. I'm sort of new to Jeff Dyer, although he's been writing for a long time. And for this book, a new association called Writers in Residence sent him to live on an aircraft carrier for 2 weeks. So he is aboard the USS George H.W. Bush, and he spends 2 weeks just kind of exploring the ship, getting to know as many personnel as possible, and writing about it. And I just loved this book, partially because Jeff Dyer is just enamored with the aircraft carrier. He said that he was sort of a military nut when he was a kid and always built model airplanes. And he kind of brings that childlike delight to the aircraft carrier, which is really rare in nonfiction these days, which is usually so ironic. So it was a delightful read. And anybody will tell you that writing a positive book review is the hardest thing you can do.
Yes.
Because it becomes so monotonous.
Yes.
But what Jeff Dyer actually does is write a 200-page positive review of an aircraft carrier and manages to make it really, really fascinating. I just loved being in his company while he was on this carrier.
Well, I actually spent 2 days at sea on that aircraft carrier, so I'll have to read that. That's fascinating. All right, Mark, tell us what your pick is, your number one choice this year.
Oh, I pick Lila by Marilyn Robinson.
What was it about Lila that you loved?
Well, this is the third book that she's written about this fictional town in Iowa called Gilead. And if people have been following them along, if they're like me anyway, they're anxious to read a new installment of her take on life in this small town. But in the first book, she introduced us to this character, this minister, John Ames, and he got married very late in his life and had a child, and he was writing a letter to his son to tell him who he was, just in case he wasn't around to tell him later on. And in the second one, he tells a story, the same story, from the view of the neighbor, not the same story, but a similar story in place and time. And in the new book, Lila, he finally tells the story of the woman that Reverend Ames falls in love with late in his life and marries, this woman, Lila. And her story, I think, is the most compelling of them all. And for me so far, it's the best of the three books that she's written. Lila, it turns out, was stolen away by a neighbor and taken on the road during the Depression through the Dust Bowl, made her way through some very, very tough times and circumstances to find herself literally at the door of this church in Iowa and meeting Reverend Ames and hearing from him. So I just thought it was a beautifully written story, and it's hard to separate it from the other two because I think ultimately, at some point, all these books are going to be thought of and read together as one story.
Let me get a listener in here, Mark, who has read Lila, Karen in Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Karen. Glad you called. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I was in the queue and not able to listen to some of the comments, but so I might be repeating. However, Lila was exquisite. It was exquisite as plot development, for language, for character development, for the different voices that one hears the protagonist Lila and her husband Reverend Ames. Also, I'm in an interfaith group called the Daughters of Abraham, and it is a wonderful choice for an interfaith group as a Christian choice. Just beautifully developed. I can't say enough wonderful things about it.
Well, Karen, thank you. Mark, you've got a listener there who agrees. Would you read from Lila just a bit?
Yeah, sure. This is from Lila. Well, that's all fine, she thought, but I know there's more to it, and so do you. She just wished it was over and she had a child or no child, and she could stop thinking how hard it would be for him to keep all this talk. It came down to old Boughton again, struggling up those stairs to weep and pray and dampen a small brow, his bony self half a step from the grave and still without a sensible word to say about any of it. But then her husband smiled at her, and she could see in his face that he had had every one of these thoughts, that he knew everything about them. These thoughts were waiting and familiar, like a house where you knew you belonged, though you just hated to go there and doubted once you were there you'd ever leave. He said, "You and I," and shrugged.
Let me bring another voice in at this point. From Minneapolis, Minnesota, Lori Hertzel is with us, senior editor for books at the Minneapolis Star Tribune and author of News to Me, Adventures of an Accidental Journalist. Lori, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your top book of the year, the top book of 2014.
Well, I kind of cheated. I picked one in fiction and one in nonfiction.
Okay, that's all
but
right.
I'll only talk about one at this point. The nonfiction was The Empathy Exams, which is an essay collection by Leslie Jameson. But the top fiction for me was Fourth of July Creek by Smith Henderson. This is one of many just extraordinary debut novels that came out in 2014. And it came out a little earlier in the year. It came out, I think, in May or in the summer. And so it's sort of didn't get, I think, as much attention in the fall when all the awards were being announced, but I thought that it really deserved it. This novel is set in the late 70s, early 80s, the Reagan era, and it's set in Montana. And the protagonist is this guy named Pete Snow. He's a social worker. So his job, of course, is to go and visit homes and help people mend their kind of broken lives, these people in these small towns and these mountain towns. But his life is just falling apart at the same time. He drinks too much. The bar scenes are just sort of depressing, but kind of wonderful. His wife is leaving him. His daughter is run away. So he's a very, very flawed protagonist. And what really sets this story in motion is this boy, this sort of feral child who shows up at the school, and he's not been homeschooled. Really, he's not been schooled at all. He's just this kid who's living in the mountains with his father. And so Pete takes him and, gets him some clothes and gets him some food and starts to take him home again. And then he finds out, who his father is. And his father is this reclusive, sort of self-proclaimed prophet named Benjamin Pearl, who really sees the world as an evil place. And he's going to wreak vengeance. And so it just becomes this great, great story and just so beautifully written.
Mm. Let's get a caller in here, James in Austin, Texas. Hi, James. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yes, my choice has got to be American Sniper, which is actually not first published this year, but it's being republished with a new cover because it's being made into a film by Clint Eastwood that comes out on Christmas Day this year. And I found it fascinating, not just because it shows the sacrifices made by soldiers who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it does that, but it gives a very unique look into America's elite military. This was a sniper, a Navy SEAL sniper, who actually surpassed the previous record for the most confirmed kills. And to me, one of the most breathtaking parts of the book was actually that it included memoirs by his wife, and his wife actually wrote maybe a third of the book. And to see her relationship, how it slowly faded and was essentially ruined by his military service, and the fact that he put his military service first was really something unique that I saw in it.
Oh, I'm glad you called, James. Thank you. American Sniper, Janet Potter. There's a movie connection there. There's been a movie connection with a couple of books recently. Gone Girl just came out, right? Unbroken is coming out at Christmas. Talk about those connections between books and the big screen.
I'm very excited to see Unbroken.
Yes, me too.
That's a book that you kind of rushed through reading, partially because it was so sad that you think, gosh, I just want to get to the part where this is over because you know he's out. So I wonder if the movie-going experience will be similar to that because it's less torture. And I've heard that the guy who plays Louis Zamperini, the protagonist, does a great job. So I think that'll be a great film.
Mark LaFromboise, you've been watching people come in and out of the bookstore this last year, picking up books off the shelves. What's flying off? What about this year's crop of books has done very well?
Oh, boy. And paperback books like Unbroken, which has never stopped selling since it came out, and Boys in the Boat, which tells a story about the University of Washington rowing team that went to the Olympics in the 30s. But also, The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace has been a great book for us. It tells a story of a young man in Newark who is an exceptional kid, an exceptional student, an athlete who gets mixed up in some bad business and whose life is tragically cut short. Then that story is told from the point of view of his roommate at Yale. It's just a very, very powerful story, very, very well told, very well written. Also, Brian Stevens' book, Just Mercy, which was, he's the director of the Equal Justice Initiative. And this is his story about young people incarcerated for life from a very early age, and also his work on death penalty cases. Those books have been extremely popular at the store.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're looking back this hour at the best books of 2014, and you can join the conversation. What's the book you just cannot put down this year? Which book are you hoping to get for the holidays? We're speaking this hour with Janet Potter. She writes for The Millions, an online magazine covering books and culture. Also, Lori Herzl, senior editor for books at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And Mark LaFromboise is with us, book buyer at Politics and Prose Bookstore. Let's get a caller in here, Chris from New York. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Hi. Well, go ahead. What do you got there?
Thanks for taking my call. What I've got is Robert M. Dowling's new biography of Eugene O'Neill. It's called Eugene O'Neill, Life in Four Acts. I think it's Yale University Press. And it's really fantastic. It's a sort of a whole new look at O'Neill, not as a tragedy-laden, miserable guy, but actually a remarkably funny and much more complex and interesting guy. Mm. Than many people believe. Hmm. And he did all this new research, and he unearthed all this new stuff so that he's able to, kind of show O'Neill's plays in the context of his life with much more accuracy and clarity than anyone has been able to do before. At least that's what I thought.
Excellent. Chris, thank you. Eugene O'Neill, A Life in 4X. Thanks for the tip. Sabrina in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Sabrina. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I am a literary critic and I'm a graduate student, and I am calling because I'm wondering if any of the interviewers were considering Claudia Rankine's Citizen, an American Lyric at all, and it's a book that really moved me, and considering the Eric Garner verdict in Ferguson, I actually returned to the opening of Citizen yesterday, and as I was reading the prose poem just was, moved to tears. So I was wondering if the book was considered at all.
Sabrina, thank you. Janet, Lori, Mark?
Well, I could talk about that a little bit. That will make the folks at Grey Wolf Press very happy. Grey Wolf in Minneapolis is the publisher of that book, which was a finalist for the National Book Award. I don't have it on my list simply because I personally didn't read it, but she teaches at the university where I'm working on my MFA, and I know that book is really highly regarded, and I have seen it in the last few days, as the caller suggests, some of her poems and writings all over Facebook. I think that people are really taking that book to heart right now.
Janet Potter, tell us what's next on your list of best books this year.
One of my other favorites this year was Wolf in White Van by John Darnielle. I actually read this book twice. I read it a little bit before it first came out, and I thought it was pretty good. And then a few months later, somebody asked me to review it, so I thought I would read it again. And the second time through, I was just really blown away by the maturity of the book from a first-time novelist. John Darnell is the lead singer and lyricist of the Mountain Goats, and he's known as a good songwriter. And so this was kind of his, you know, oh, can he write a novel as well? And yes, he can. It's extremely good. It's the story of a young man named Sean whose face is severely disfigured when he is a teenager. And what happened is revealed very slowly throughout the book and then not entirely until the last page when you finally found out what happened to him to cause the disfigurement. But he's basically a recluse and runs a role-playing game through the mail called Trace Italian. So to play the game, you send in your moves to him by mail. You say, okay, now I want to dig a hole. Now I want to cross the bridge. And then he sends you a letter back telling you what happened. And so he lives this reclusive life. And it's about his life. It's about what happened to him when he was a teenager and what brought that on. It's also about some teenagers playing his game who take it too seriously and come to some harm.
Read a little bit from it. You have a little clip there. Read a little bit from Wolf in the White Van.
Yeah. So this is a scene where Sean's watching a televangelist on late night TV, and he hears them say that if you play this one rock album backwards, you hear the phrase Wolf in White Van, and he's captivated by that. I looked back over at the TV. Everybody had their eyes firmly fixed on the guest who was holding up more records by so many rock bands. He said the problem was everywhere. It was epidemic. But at that moment, all I could see was the Wolf in the White Van, so alive, so strong, hidden from view, unnoticed, concealed. And I thought, maybe he's real, this wolf, and he's really out there in a white van somewhere riding around. Maybe he's in the far back, pacing back and forth, circling, the pads of his huge paws raw and cracking, his thick, sharp claws dully clicking against the raised, rusty steel track ridges of the floor. Maybe he's sound asleep, or maybe he's just pretending. And then the van stops somewhere, maybe, and somebody gets out and walks around the side to the back and grabs hold of the handle and flings the doors open wide. Maybe whoever has kept him wears a mechanic's jumpsuit and some sunglasses, and he hasn't fed the great wolf for weeks, cruising the streets of the city at night, and the wolf's crazy with hunger now, he can't even think. Maybe he's not locked up in the back at all. He could be riding in the passenger seat like a dog, just sitting and staring out in the open window, looking around, checking everybody out. Maybe he's over in the other seat behind the steering wheel. Maybe he's driving.
Wolf in the White Van. Here's Alice in Montpelier, Vermont. Hi, Alice. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm hoping people will read a book by Roz Chass. She's the New Yorker illustrator, cartoonist. It's called Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? It's a story of her parents aging and death and all the issues that people are just afraid of engaging with. But she's 100% honest, genuine, and we can all relate to it.
Alice, thank you. There's some listeners online who agree with you. Here's Gustavo who says, can't we talk about something more pleasant? Covers a subject none of us wants to deal with, aging and death of loved ones, in a way that will make you laugh, cry, learn, and share. Lori, that was actually on your list, was it not?
Oh, yeah. That book is absolutely fabulous. And that was also a finalist for the National Book Award. I think maybe the first time that a graphic novel has been a finalist. Mm. She portrays her parents as difficult and bizarre and a little bit paranoid. But her love for them is just so clear, even as she portrays them as these very difficult people. Her mother wears a life alert pendant but won't activate it because she doesn't ever want to go to the hospital. It's just all these contradictions that I think are very true to life. It's a really fine book.
Mark, another one of your picks is American Innovations, which is a collection of short stories. Tell us about this one.
Oh, I love this book. It, too, was published very early in the year, so I'm hoping just to remind people about it in case they'd forgotten. She's very, very smart, but she's also very, very funny. But it's not the kind of humor that makes you laugh out loud. It's the kind of humor that kind of puts a grin on your face and just puts you a little bit off of balance. It's kind of hard to describe, as you can guess.
But good nonetheless.
Terrific, yes.
Here's Fred in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hi, Fred. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
The book I would suggest is All the Light We Cannot See by John Doerr.
Oh, yes. I loved that book, yes.
I love that book. It's written in very short chapters, but it's you can't wait for the next chapter to see whether you're going backwards or forwards in the lives of these two young people, the blind girl from Paris and the young boy who's a genius in inventions in Germany, and how their lives ultimately cross in San Malo when the bombing takes place at the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. Just a remarkable book.
Ah, Fred, thank you. Mark, I think that was on your list as well as the best this year.
No, I love this book, too. Like the caller said, the chapters are very short, which makes the pace of the book go very, very fast. The story itself is terrific to the blind French girl Marie Laurie and the young German kid, and you know their paths are bound to cross almost from the very instant you begin reading, but you don't know how, and that's where Anthony Doerr is able to keep tension and the drama in the story.
Here's Heather in Las Casas, Tennessee. Hi, Heather. Glad you called. Welcome.
Hi, James. Glad to be on the line. I wanted to recommend a book for children, actually, The Blood of Olympus by Rick Riordan.
Okay. Have your kids read it? Why do you like it? Why is it good?
It's a great book for kids, especially for my case, the boys. They were actually the first to let me know when it was going to be available for pre-order, made sure I had it ordered and at the house, and they read it through within a week. It was one of those big deals for them. I think it's because of between the mythology and children their own age having adventures, it gave them something really to look forward to. And it's so hard to get kids ages 10 to 12 to read. So it was one of those wonderful books.
I get it, Heather. Thank you. Rick Riordan, The Blood of Olympus. Rick's been on this program before. Great book. Okay, Heather, thank you. We'll pick it up. Deborah in Hudson, Wisconsin. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a favorite. I go by authors. I used to read everything of one author when I was a kid, and I bought a couple of children's books at Macy's, downtown Minneapolis, and I think they're very powerful, really smart. And the one book that helped when I read these to my kids was The Triangle and the Beautiful Circle by Dr. Polaha. And that was teaching saving. And everybody at this time can see the beauty of teaching your kids saving.
Mm-hmm.
And The Tumbler was the second book. I bought them both at Macy's, downtown Minneapolis. And both of them are very powerful books. And both my kids are straight-A students, never got a B in their life. And I think that really helped. Basically, with The Triangle, it really helped them keep on track of what they were their goals were.
Good for you,
and,
Deborah.
I know that.
Thank you. The Triangle and the Beautiful Circle. And another one there, a couple of great books. Good picks. Mark and Laura, you both have Nora Webster on your list. Mark, what's going on in this book?
I like Comte Aubin a lot. And like his other books, in Nora Webster, he describes a very recognizable person, somebody we know. In this case, it's a woman in Wexford, just south of Dublin, and she's recently widowed. Her husband had been a school teacher, and it's her navigating life as the mother of two young children and two grown children. It's he reminds us of the poetry in ordinary lives, I think.
I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Here's Terry in Winchester, Massachusetts. Hi, Terry. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I'd like to say a book that I haven't read yet, but I'd like to read and hope will be a new favorite of mine. One of my favorite authors, William Gibson, has written a new novel. I wish I could remember the name, but I'd love to read his book and see what your guests have to say about that.
Okay, Terry. How about Janet Potter? What do you think? Do you know what Terry's talking about?
I'm trying to remember the title. I had a copy and I quickly passed it on to a friend of mine who loves William Gibson.
Could it be The Peripheral?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I know that it made his day when I gave it to him. That's as far as I got.
Patricia is in Williamsburg, Virginia. Hi, Patricia. Welcome to
Hi,
On Point.
Jane.
Hi.
I wanted to recommend a novel entitled In the Light of What We Know by Zia Haider Rahman. It's a marvelous contemporary exploration of identity and class and cross-cultural clashes, and it's set in London primarily and in Afghanistan, in Pakistan. It's just an extraordinary book that will send chills up your spine.
In the light of what we know. All right, yeah. Patricia, thank you. Thank you very much. Lori, how about the empathy exams? You mentioned them earlier, a collection of essays, exploring pain and how we understand it. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. It's just a remarkable book. It is pretty rare that a collection of essays hits the New York Times bestseller list, and I think it's even more rare for it to be a debut collection, but that was the case with this book, Leslie Jameson. Again, this is another Grey Wolf Press book. These essays, she's just a remarkable observer, and she's very curious. And so, yes, they all have something to do with pain and her own reaction to other people's pain, which is extremely empathetic, but it is so much beyond that. That's sort of the thread that ties all of these essays together. But she's also, she can be wryly funny. She is a gorgeous writer. She moves in and out in these essays between sort of memoir and reportage without the essays being exactly either one of those things. They're very interesting. The topics of the essays are all quite different. In one, she goes to prison to visit this ultramarathoner who's been imprisoned for some kind of problems with the IRS that may or may not have actually existed. But her interest in him is, what is it like for this person who loves to run and be free and who feels best when he's in motion to be trapped and confined in this way? And so she comes at things with sort of an unusual slant. And I think the best essay in the book is the one where she explores this peculiar syndrome called Magellan's syndrome, where people think they have these fibers coming out of their skin and they have these kind of crawly things under their skin. And it's unclear if it's actually a physical condition or perhaps a mental condition, but she is so interested in this and so fascinated by it that at one point she almost starts thinking that she has this too. Mm. But it's a remarkable book.
Mm. The Empathy Exams. Mark LaForme Boys, how do you pick your top books? What are you looking for in a good book?
Books that engage you and books that have characters that grab your interest and really don't let go. Books that make you laugh really exhaust the range of emotions. Sometimes it's a hard to put your finger on quality too. And there's just something that appeals to something very personal inside you too.
Janet Potter, how do you choose? What are you looking for in a really good book?
Well, you know, when I was looking over the books I read this year, it was really the year of the underdog for me. There were a few books that came out by some of my favorite authors. I highly anticipated them, and they kind of left me feeling cold. And then it was the books that kind of come out of nowhere. It's recommended to you, and then you say, okay, and then it just blows you away. And those were the books that I loved. Books like Another Great Day at Sea and Throne by Carrie Howley. They just took me by surprise and made my day.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour about the literacy landscape of 2014, the books we loved, the books you loved, and why they stand out. We're speaking this hour with Janet Potter. She writes for The Millions, an online magazine covering books and culture. Also, Lori Herzl, senior editor for books at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And Mark LaFromboise is with us, book buyer at Politics and Prose Bookstore. A couple of comments from online. Colleen on Twitter says she liked Sane New World by Ruby Wax, who blends humor with neuroscience education to show how mindfulness works. Colleen, thank you. Here's Annie, also on Twitter, who recommends Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. Thanks to those listeners. And here's another, Woody in Buffalo, New York. Welcome to On Point. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course. Go ahead.
I just have to tell you about a book I reviewed for the Rumpus called Man v. Nature by Diane Cook.
Okay.
It's a collection of short stories that are totally unlike anything I've read before, deeply affecting, written in an economical and yet really beautiful way. And I guess the word to describe the stories would be uncanny. They're sort of menacing, but also beautiful in a way that speaks to sort of the truth of the human experience, I guess I'd say.
All right, got it. Man v. Nature by Diane Cook. Woody, thank you. Thank you very much. Here's Julie in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hi, Julie. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. Go ahead.
The book that that blew me away this year is called Life Animated by Ron Suskind. It's a memoir about his autistic son, and it's about how the family pulled together to help him learn through his passion, which were Disney movies. An incredible story of an amazing family and a wonderful young man. Very uplifting, but a real roller coaster ride. You know, no happy ending, but just an amazing story.
Julie, thank you. Thanks for the recommendation. Lori Herzl, let's go back to you. Another book out there that has gotten a lot of good reviews, The Autobiography of Laura Ingalls Wilder. This book made your list, did it not?
It did. It's called Pioneer Girl, and it is the memoir that she wrote when she first sat down to write what eventually became the Little House books, which are fiction. And this book it's just fascinating for anyone who grew up on Little House books, as I did, as probably every girl in Minnesota did.
Not just Minnesota, Lori.
Yeah, everywhere. No, you're right. Yeah. Absolutely. This was published by the South Dakota Historical Society Press, and they put a lot of work into it. It took longer for them to put this together than they thought. I think they thought it was going to come out in the spring or maybe even last year. But it is highly annotated. It is packed with photographs. And one thing that's very interesting about it is her view of life on the prairie, life as a pioneer girl, is much harsher and much grittier than what you read in those Little House books, which, of course, are highly fictionalized. And so it's very interesting to read this book, and you can see some of the stories that she later kind of tames and makes sweet in the Little House books. But, you know, in Pioneer Girl, which is the title of this one, they're pretty unvarnished. Mm. And the other thing that I think was pretty interesting is it goes into a little bit about the relationship with her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane, who helped her write those books. Rose also mined Pioneer Girl, this memoir, for a couple of her own books. Mm. So it's not a terribly long book, but a lot sprang from it.
Mark LaFramboise, are these themes of strong female characters something that readers are looking for this year?
Always, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we saw that in Lila. We saw that with Nora Webster, certainly. We saw that with All the Light We Cannot See, too. I think Janet mentioned Throne by Carrie Howley. That was on my list too, but that was an extraordinary book, first person account by a woman, an academic, who gets into the unlikely world of mixed martial arts. But no, I agree. There's been a lot of very, very strong women in books this year.
Here's John in Austin, Texas. Hi, John. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I'd like to recommend a book of poetry that I read this year.
Okay.
And it's by a British poet. He died this year at age 91. His name is Danny Abse. And it's an unusual spelling, D-A-N-N-I-E, last name A-B-S-E. His book is Ask the Moon. He was a physician, wrote for many, many years. His poems are very precise, very compassionate, very tender, always very, very deeply felt. And they were going to publish his last book next year, but since he died this year, they published it just in November. So,
Ask the Moon.
Could read a few lines if you.
Do you have two or three quick ones? Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. This is from a poem called Last Words. And how would I wish to go? Not as an opera, that would offend. Nor like a blue-eyed cowboy shot and short of words, but finger-tapping, still our private Morse, ... love you, before the last flowers and flies descend.
John from Austin, Texas, thank you. That's Ask the Moon, a book of poetry. Here's Patrick in Fishersville, Virginia. Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jane. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I would like to recommend Redeployment by Mr. Clay. I am a returning veteran, disabled during one of my tours, and there were some lines. It was just such a true look at our experiences in those conflicts, and there were some lines that truly resonated with me. As a returning vet and dealing with the reintegration and the redeployment into society as a civilian now.
Mm-hmm.
The one line, and I heard it, and it's the line that I heard on NPR, actually, that made me pick up the book, and it was the frustration. And when we return and we talk to somebody who may be more liberal, and you know, it makes you want to defend what we did. But when we talk to the more conservative and hawkish folks, you want to defend the liberals.
So Redeployment is the book. I hear you, Patrick. Thank you, sir, for your service, and thanks for calling with this book. We'll put it on the list by Phil Clay. Let's go to Susan now in Greenwich, Connecticut. Hi, Susan. Welcome to One Point.
The book I'm recommending is a collection of short stories by Hilary Mantel called The Assassination of Margaret Thatcher. I loved it. It was almost like reading Henry James. It's very creepy. The author actually saw Margaret Thatcher walking one time out of a hospital. She was very near, and she had this idea that she could have been the assassin. But it's a collection of really good, creepy stories.
I've heard that, and I've seen that on a couple of different lists. Mark, Janet, Lori, have you as well?
It was one that we reviewed, and some of our readers, when we did the reader recommendations with our big holiday roundup, some of the readers recommended that book as well. It seems to me that, you know, there were a lot of really fine collections of short stories that were published this year, and it's sort of a continuation of a resurgence of short fiction. You know, Laurie Moore had Bark, and Jean Thompson had The Witch and Other Stories. Margaret Atwood had a collection, Elizabeth McCracken, and then there are a lot of debut authors as well. And I, for one, I'm really happy to see that short stories are once again alive and well.
Laurie, thank you. Give me your guilty pleasures this year, panel. Mark, Janet, Lori, what were some books you just couldn't put down? They were guilty pleasures. Mark LaFromboise?
One guilty pleasure was William Alexander's book, Flirting with French. It was a paperback original, so it might not have made too many lists. But Alexander tries to learn French in middle age, and he's very, very funny talking about traveling in France with his wife by bicycle and mangling the language and being misunderstood. But he's also does these, I think, wonderful digressions talking about language acquisition and the way our brains work. And, you know, the first rule of digressions, the digressions have to be interesting. And for him, they really were. Mm-hmm. It was a really good book.
Mark chooses Flirting with French. How about you, Janet Potter? A guilty pleasure.
This year, I've really gotten into the first two books in the Patrick Rothfuss Kingkiller Chronicles. It'll be a trilogy. The first book is called The Name of the Wind, and the second book is called A Wise Man's Fear. And it's about a young man who is orphaned and then travels to the capital city to study magic, basically. They call it arcanism in the books. But it's a long, epic medieval crazy tale that's also kind of coming of age of a young magician. And there's street fighting, there's romance, there's music, there's dancing.
It's got it all.
There's school pranks, and they're just, yeah, they're wonderful, they're dense, and it's the perfect thing to pick up when you don't want to pick up anything else.
Lori Herzl, your guilty pleasure.
Well, it's on someone else's list, and so I'm not sure how guilty this is, but I just devoured Tana French's new mystery, And now you're going to have to help me with the title. Is it The Secret Place, I think it's called?
Yes, The Secret Place.
Yeah, it's set in Ireland, and I'm sort of a sucker for anything set in Ireland. But she's a great writer of mysteries. I would compare her to Kate Atkinson in many ways. And this was a story set in a girls' school, and she just had those girls down pat. I mean, her depiction of these, you know, backbiting and secret and all the texting and all the slang, and it was great. It was a great mystery.
The Secret Place. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Let's go back to the phones here. Maria in Syracuse, New York. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the program. Hi, Maria. Up. Oh, let's go to Mac in Oakhurst, Oklahoma. Hi, Mac. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. What'd you like this year? What book did you really enjoy?
I enjoyed three books this year.
Okay.
All by the same author, Rush Limbaugh.
Okay.
And they are the fascinating books of American history that I haven't learned and haven't read, well, remembered since back in the 50s when I was in school. And they are Rush Revere and the Pilgrims, and then there's Rush Revere and the Patriots, and Rush Revere and the American Revolution.
Okay.
And there are three fascinating books.
All American history books
and
for
kids. And I recommend them to all children to read.
Got it, Mac. Thank you. Thanks for the call. Here's Kathy in Russell Springs, Kentucky. Hi, Kathy. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
My favorite book this year was a book called Incense and Peppermints by Carol Bellisera.
It's a great title.
And, yes?
Yes, it's a great title. Go ahead.
Yes, it's about an army nurse in Vietnam, set mostly back at during the war. And it was about a very strong woman. And actually, the author, Carol Bellisera, is a veteran, an Air Force veteran, and turned writer. So I really, really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Kathy, thank you. What about some other genres? We've covered a lot here. Janet Potter, what about legal thrillers or cookbooks? Let's get down to the very basics here. What did well this year, 2014?
Yeah, there's so many good cookbooks. There's a new one that just came out by Faden Press called Mexico, the Cookbook. It's actually written by a Mexican chef, which is surprisingly rare for a Mexican cookbook. One of my favorites was 4 and 20 Blackbirds Cookbook. It's a pie cookbook. They have a pie shop in Brooklyn. And that's what I used for the 14 Thanksgiving pies that I made this month. So I have a very well-worn copy, and I highly recommend it.
Donna is in Brookings, South Dakota. Hi, Donna. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go
the
ahead.
The book I've got to recommend is Daughter of the Grasslands. It's a memoir, and it's by Mary Wooster Haug, H-A-U-G.
And what made it so great, and, Donna?
I'm sorry, what did you
ask? What made it so great?
Oh, it's a strong woman writing about her growing up in South Dakota. It's a picture of her mother and a relationship between a mother and a daughter, and she strangely can weave it with her sabbatical in South Korea. And it's just an excellent book. I bought it for my daughters, my sisters, and female friends that I love a lot.
Daughter of the Grasslands. Donna, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's look ahead, 2015. What are you anticipating in the book world? Lori Herzl, you first.
Well, quite a few books that people are really looking forward to. One of them is Kazuo Shigeru has a new book coming out. I didn't write down these titles, so I'm afraid you're just going to have to go with the authors here. And Kate Atkinson has a sequel to Life After Life. That one is going to be in high demand. Those are the two that come instantly to mind.
What about you, Janet?
I didn't know about either of those two, so that's very exciting. I'm really looking forward to John Ronson's new book. I think it comes out in March. He wrote The Psychopath Test, which I was a big fan of. Kelly Link has a new book of short stories coming out in January or February called Get in Trouble. And Katie Coyle has a young adult novel coming out in January called Vivian Apple Versus the Apocalypse, which I have a copy, and it's the next thing I'm going to read.
What about you, Mark LaFramboise?
Hana Yanagira, who wrote The People in the Trees, has a new book coming out called A Little Life, which is a huge book, ironically, from the title. But it's a great story about four friends who you follow from college into early adulthood in New York City. It's a great book. Mm.
What a charming hour. Thank you so much for being with us. Janet Potter, staff writer for The Millions. Really appreciate your suggestions and your time. Thanks, Janet.
Thanks, Jane.
Laurie Hertzel, senior editor for books at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Laurie, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And Mark Lefrumbois, book buyer at Politics and Prose Bookstore. Great to have you, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you. It was fun.
And great suggestions, listeners. Thank you. All our guests, top books, and the On Point staff favorites are on our website, onpointradio.org. Coming up Monday, we look at jealousy, that most human emotion, its history, its meaning, even its social value. Good to be with you this week. Have a great weekend, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.